you know, and contemplate our distant ancestry as it relates to the continent, as it relates to the diaspora, this movie afforded me the opportunity to go back to my more recent lineage, you know, 100 years or so, you know, and go back to, you know, the Mississippi, a state that I had never been to. You know, I'm almost 40 years old. And my matrilineal grandfather was born in Mississippi. You know, my uncle, who was so important to my life, was there until he was a young man. And I had never been. And it was a beautiful experience to go on that blues trail and spend time in those places. But it also was a harrowing experience at the same time. I went to the Dockery Plantation in the Mississippi Delta, which is, you know, thought to be, you know, maybe the place where the first true Delta blues song was played by a man called Charlie Patton. And when you go, you know, you realize that they were making this music in slave quarters, you know, and it was just this immense wealth that was owned by this plantation, like the amount of fertile land that you'll see, the amount of crops that you'll see, you know, and that it was also a place where most people, you know, were denied access to these resources. They were backbreakingly poor, you know, and then at that time, often these were enslaved people, you know, weren't being paid anything, you know. So for me, to know that my family had history there, and I was touching down in that place for the first time, it was a level of guilt there for me, but there was also a level of wonder to know what my recent ancestors were endured, you know what I mean, and were able to survive, and were able to make plans and affirm their humanity and affect the world, you know, with their culture. You know, I was really taken aback by it, and while I was there with my composer Ludvig Göransson, who made our incredible score, our incredible soundtrack. You know, I encourage folks to go out and go to their streaming platforms and listen to some of this great music that he made. You know, he was born and raised in Linköping, Sweden, you know, thousands of miles away from the United States. But his father, you know, due to the fact that these black musicians weren't allowed to tour in the U.S., some of the British musicians who loved their music took them to Europe to tour. You know, and Sweden was one of the places that they played. Where Ludvig's father saw these players, Howlin' Wolf, Albert King, you know, as a teenager in Sweden, and was so inspired by their music that he became a blues guitarist, who then taught his son how to play. His son would end up being Ludvig and become, you know, my good friend and the composer on all of my movies. You know, Ludvig was there with me on a blues trail, and his father was there with him. It was a lifelong dream for his father to take this trip with him. So Ludvig, you know, through researching this movie, was fulfilling, you know, his 70-year-old father's dream, you know, to see the birthplace of this music that changed his life so much, you know, and that you know, enabled me to understand, like, just like the global impact of these incredible human beings, who, due to the shame and the misinformation associated with the time that they came up in, and the exploitation that was happening, the indignities that were happening, you know, we don't look at that time enough, you know. So I took the opportunity to do so very seriously.
Mm. So what's it like working with your wife? I mean, you credit her with so much. You co-produced the film with her. What's it like working with Zinzi on this masterpiece?
I mean, it's great, man. Zinzi is my favorite person in the world. You know, I've been around her a long time, and it's still somehow it feels like it's not long enough, you know. And you know, she knows me really well. We're very different, you know, which is very helpful. We got two different communication styles, two different ways of seeing the world. So in general, if I have a situation that I can't crack, you know, because she comes at things with a different angle, normally she can crack it very easily, you know?
You know, I remember first meeting you and Zinzi back in 2013. Now at the big premiere in New York, there she is,
yep.
Pregnant with your second child, the two of your second child.
But
this was 5:30 in the morning. It was at the Sundance Film Festival. You had just introduced Fruitvale. I said, would you be willing willing to come in at 5:30 because the show was at 6. You said, yep, I'm there. You said because your uncle, Clarence Thomas, not the justice, but the secretary general of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, had been on the show, loved it. And I said to you, can you give a message to him? Look directly into the camera and you said, hi, Uncle Bud. But having said that, I wanted to go to the second part of that conversation. As you talked at that point, I think you were working at the San Francisco, the Juvenile Detention Center? You just come out with Fruitvale?
The Youth Guidance Center, yep.
So let's go to that clip.
I've never been homeless in my life. I always had a home. When I first went to film school, however, because it was such a sporadic thing, I went down to Los Angeles, you know, and I didn't have anywhere to stay yet. So I kind of had to jump start in classes and things like that. For about a week and a half, you know what I mean? I was you know, getting dressed in my car, spending most of my time in school, you know, until I found a place. But I bumped around quite a bit. I stayed with some Jesuits. You know what I mean? With a group of Jesuits that were in training, basically. I stayed with like a distant relative for a day or two, but I found my car to kind of be a safe haven for a little bit, you know, before I got an apartment.
So Ryan, that's you back in 2013, telling your life story. You had just done Fruitvale, first time working with, as you have from then on, with Michael B. Jordan. I don't think most people know that part of your life, what that meant.
Yeah, it happened very fast for me in terms of like the decision to go to Los Angeles and become a filmmaker, you know. And I went down there without everything figured out, you know, I ended up needing a lot of support from a lot of different people, and I'm still close with all of those people. I'm a product of so much support that's been poured into me, you know, from likely sources, but also very unlikely sources.
Is it true that Zinzi made your dream possible by paying $300 for your first movie writing software when you couldn't afford it?
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Yeah. Yeah, Zinzi did buy me a Final Draft. One of the kindest things anybody's ever done for me. We were both student athletes. You know, we would buy each other things all the time, man. You know, but it was often, it was rarely something as forward thinking as that. You know, which kind of just speaks to who she is, man. And she does things like that all the time, like. Like she's an incredible gift giver.
I wanted to play that clip from 2013. It's not so long ago. It's a dozen years ago. And talk about what you negotiated in making Sinners, the arrangement you had with Warner Brothers. The New York Times reports Warner Brothers agreed to spend $90 million to make Sinners and agreed to give you a cut of gross ticket sales, now rare arrangement known as first dollar gross, meaning before they recoup their costs, you're getting money as well. Warner also agreed, and this is absolutely key, to relinquish its ownership of the film to you after 25 years. The Times reports, quote, some rival film companies were horrified that Warner Brothers would give a film away even after a period of time. Talk about these key components of your contract and why this was so critical for you, Ryan Coogler.
That's a great question. I mean, what I will do is I'll maybe add some context that maybe those articles didn't add. I'm not the first filmmaker to get any of these deals, you know. And Warner Brothers is not the first studio to provide these deals to a filmmaker. You know, I think that a lot has been made of my deal in particular. I'm not totally sure why, you know, I have my guesses, you know, but I've been in the industry long enough to know what kind of deals are possible, and nothing about this deal is a new thing, you know.
What's your guesses, Ryan?
It is not a con. I'd rather not say. but you know, like the attention on what's happening with this project, you know, outside of it as a piece of art and as a piece of commerce has been very interesting, you know. But for me, you know, this film was very important to me. As a writer director, I've made over $2 billion at the global box office. I'm not yet 40 years old. It's taken a lot time, commitment, energy, and I've missed out on a lot of things in my life. Making films that will always be owned by other people. For this one, because it was so personal. And because I had the ability to negotiate, you know, I asked for a few things that were very important to me for this project, you know, and for what it was about and what it meant to me and my family. And thankfully, you know, I was able to get those things I was asking for from Warner Brothers.
Well, Ryan, I know you have to go, but reading from The Guardian, you're widely considered the highest grossing black director in history. Your film Black Panther became the highest grossing film of all time, directed by an African-American director, grossing over $1.3 billion worldwide. I can't believe I'm saying to you, what do you have to say to young directors? Because you are a young director, but as Sinners comes out, what you want people to take away from it and how you want to inspire, I was going to say the next generation, but actually your generation.
Well, look, I'm what's called an elder millennial. You know, it's a generation of filmmakers coming up behind me, like that's Gen Z, they'll call them Zoomers. But for them, I think they have an incredible advantage to just having grown up with, you know, with smartphones in their pockets. You know, I don't think that's an advantage for their psychology. You know what I'm saying? Like, but it is an advantage for their filmmaking abilities. You know, to have access to this type of technology constantly. And I think that the movies that I see them make, when I look at things on the internet, I'm just always kind of blown away by the editing style and the way that they see the world. And we need their movies. You know, look, for me, A lot of my business success has been put in the context of me being black, you know. And I think that's a part of the issue when people write about, you know, what my films have done. You know, I'll say this: the year Panther One came out, yes, it was the highest grossing film ever made by a black person. It was also the highest grossing film domestically that year made by anybody, you know. And for some reason, that was never talked about, you know. And for me, what I'll speak to, and after coming off of, you know, this movie and researching Delta Blues music, you know, this music made by people who the state was built to make it so that they had nothing, to make it so that they had to be sharecroppers, you know what I mean, to make it so that they couldn't leave, to make it so that some of these plantations were so massive that they had their own currency. And they own banking systems that they would pay them with. You know, they were able to make art that changed the world. That art became rock and roll. That art became the country music empire. That art became hip hop. You know, that art became house music. You know, like the fact that their stories were so amazing and so valuable, even though they were being told that they were worthless. You know what I mean? Even though I ever told that they didn't deserve anything. You know, that has stuck with me. And for me, you know, what I would say to not just young filmmakers, like I think that it's filmmakers of all ages that have yet to make their first movie. You know, so what I would say to aspiring filmmakers, you know, regardless of their age, aspiring filmmakers that are just removed from where you were when you met me in 2013, right? I would say, go make your movie. Go make your movie. Even if people are telling you that what you want to make a movie about is not important, keep going. Find a person who will support you. You know what I mean? Get better at your craft and go get it done. You know what I mean? So that you're no longer an aspiring filmmaker. You are just a filmmaker who's looking to make your next thing.
Acclaimed director Ryan Coogler, the writer, producer, director of the new supernatural vampire horror film Sinners. It's opened around the world. His past films include Fruitvale Station, Creed, and the record-breaking Black Panther and its sequel, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. Coming up next, a less supernatural story. This one takes place now in Memphis, Tennessee, about two brothers fighting the richest man in the world, Elon Musk. Stay with us.
Two sides of a coin. Two sides of a war. Two sides of reality. One foot back in the door. And I still haven't learned my lesson. So I'll go all over again with you. I still haven't learned my lesson.
Seance by Ludwig Göransson and James Blake, a song featured on the new soundtrack of the new movie Sinners. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show in Memphis, Tennessee, where Elon Musk's artificial intelligence company, X, now called XAI, opened a massive data center known as Colossus last year that supports the chatbot Grok. The facility is next to historically black neighborhoods and runs on 35 methane gas-powered turbine generators, which emit significant amounts of nitrogen oxide and other toxic chemicals. The Southern Environmental Law Center says the turbines are operating without a permit. Those permits are the focus of a Shelby County Health Department hearing taking place today, Friday, as Musk says he wants to continue to expand his project. In February, Elon Musk explained why he decided to build Colossus in Memphis.
Well, we needed a building. We can't build a building, so we must use an existing building. So we looked for factories that had been abandoned, but the factory was in good shape, like the company had gone bankrupt or something. So we found an Electrolux factory in Memphis. That's why it's in Memphis, home of Elvis, and also one of the oldest. I think it was the capital of ancient Egypt.
This is Tennessee State Representative Justin J. Pearson, a Democrat who represents Memphis.
AI, Elon Musk company, is operating 35 gas turbines in southwest Memphis, in the neighborhood where myself and my entire family lives. This is horrific news. They are increasing the amount of nitrogen dioxide, which causes smog and continues to harm people with asthma by potentially 30% to 60%.
For more, we are joined in Memphis, Tennessee, by State Representative Justin J. Pearson and his brother, Keyshawn Pearson, Executive Director of Memphis Community Against Pollution. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Keyshawn, let's begin with you, as you're quoted all over about what's happening in your community, Memphis, Tennessee, where Dr. King was assassinated April 4th, 1968. Memphis, Tennessee, where Elon Musk wants to build, is trying to expand Colossus. Explain what's happening in the community response and what you're planning to say today at the health department hearing.
What's happening in Memphis is a human rights violation. Elon Musk and XAI are violating our human right to clean air and a clean, healthy environment. Today, I plan to address the Shelby County Health Department in stating that this has not been a transparent process. This has been done in a clandestine way. And this is not the way that we can move forward healthily for our community. We need justice in processing. We need justice in the process. We need redress and repair. We don't need continual pollution. We've seen this story before where polluters come to our city, whether it has been TVA and their Valero plant, sterilization services and their ethylene oxide plant. We have continued to be looked at as the path of least resistance. Today, I will make and explain to our Shelby County Health Department that we are not the path of least resistance. We are a resilient community that deserves the human rights of clean air, clean water, clean soil, and a healthy environment. we should not continue to bear the burden of the negative health impacts of this facility and its rapid pace and movement. A phrase and a term coined by Leah Thomas, environmental intersectionalism.
I want to ask you, Elon Musk claims he chose the former Electrolux building in Memphis because he wanted to get his AI applications up as fast as possible within 122 days. He decided to use the abandoned building instead of a brand new one. Can you talk about what Electrolux was before the process it took for Musk's company XAI to purchase the building?
Electrolux was a company that scammed the city of Memphis. Electrolux came to our city and promised jobs, promised prosperity, similar to what XAI is doing, and then they left. They left without fulfilling the promise of jobs. They left without fulfilling the tax recommendations and the taxes that they said that they would provide that would elevate our community. They made promises and then they left and abandoned us. This is the same process that we've seen Elon Musk do in Texas as well as California. He will create a plan and then he will leave. And so what we're seeing right now is that this continual process is continuing to happen with a new tenant. Electrolux provided him the facility and he is scamming the city of Memphis while putting out pollution.
Keyshawn, I want to introduce your brother. This is an interesting inside-outside strategy. Tennessee Democratic State Representative Justin J. Pearson of Memphis, well-known to people around the country, the two Justins, the representatives who were forced out of the legislature, then reelected back in by their communities. Justin J. Pearson representing Memphis. Justin, thank you so much for being with us, State Representative. If you can talk about your opposition to Elon Musk and XAI, very interesting that your fellow Republicans, who have a supermajority in the Tennessee State House, recently passed a resolution recognizing Musk as, quote, a brilliant businessman who's saving lives and helping to restore America as a valuable ally of Donald J. Trump. Talk about your concerns about what this AI data center will mean.
Yeah. Look, my concern is that Elon Musk is buying and paying for access to pollute, harm, and hurt our community. Unfortunately, our mayors and elected officials and appointed officials, Mayor Lee Harris, Mayor Paul Young, Shelby County Health Director Michelle Taylor, and the Greater Memphis Chamber all decided that the community of 38109, where I live, could be on the auction block for Elon Musk to buy. And it is a horrible, horrendous project that is having serious ramifications for our community. The reason that in legislation that my colleagues passed praising Elon Musk, I put several amendments, was to tell the truth, that Elon Musk is polluting the air of Tennesseans. He is continuing and perpetuating environmental racism and environmental degradation in our community. This project is an application for 15 gas turbines, but we know today that they have 35 turbines. And yesterday, a report showed 33 of those in operation, despite the fact that the mayor of Memphis said only 15 of them were being used because that's what XAI had told him. They are liars. They are abusing our community and they're exploiting us. And it's having horrible ramifications. 17.2 tons of formaldehyde being sprayed into our air because of these gas turbines. Over 130 tons of nitrogen oxide, making them a larger polluter than the Memphis International Airport, is happening right now in our community. And elected officials and appointed officials have a responsibility to the people who they were elected and appointed to serve, not to the billionaires and the oligarchs who are misusing and abusing their authority to hurt our community.
Can you talk about Memphis Mayor Paul Young after public pressure mounted, offering to earmark a portion of the roughly $15 million in tax proceeds from XAI's operation?
Yeah, I mean, Mayor Young's idea that he's going to give us tax money in place of our health and our lives is completely asinine, and it's an insult to the people in this community. But it isn't just Mayor Young who is problematic. It's Mayor Lee Harris of Shelby County who has said nothing about this project since it started, and he was all praise and all happy-go-lucky about it, and now we can't find him. He's entirely invisible, despite the fact that the health department is under his purview. And so he hasn't come out with a statement saying that we need to protect our air, we need to protect our citizens, we need to protect our community. And that is giving license to Elon Musk and to XAI that they can't pollute our community, they can't hurt us without any ramification. But the people power that is rising up, the democracy that is being shown here by people of all constituencies, people all across our district and District 86, but all across the city and this county, is showing that we are not going to yield to the anti-democratic, anti-constitutional actions of people. We are not going to yield our lives and our lungs to Elon Musk, to Paul Young, to Lee Harris, to Michelle Taylor. We are not yielding our lives for the profits of the richest man in the world. This is ridiculous that the Greater Memphis Chamber and so many other people have literally decided that we can be sacrificed for the benefits of a data center and a supercomputer, and we not be included in the process, our voices not be heard. That isn't the way that economic development is supposed to go. And if that is the way that economic development needs to go in our city, we don't want it. It's an insult to the people in Boxtown and Westwood and West Junction and Walker Homes and Coral Lake that we are being treated this way, and that the people who have a responsibility and an obligation to do something about it are refusing to do so.
Democratic State Representative Justin J. Pearson, I wanted to extend my condolences on your baby brother's death. Not such a baby anymore, took his own life in December. And I understand, going back in time, when Tim was born, he needed a machine to breathe. Keyshawn, when he was born, premature. Can you first talk about what you feel this all has to do with, communities that have cancer clusters and are in environmentally really fragile shape as a result of pollution?
Absolutely. So Keyshawn and I lost my middle brother, his baby brother, younger brother, Tim Pearson, in December, and we miss him every single day. One of the reasons that it's so important that we do something about this gun violence epidemic, and he was a proponent and a super advocate in our community and would have been at this public hearing today fighting alongside of us as well, but he's with us in spirit for sure. But he was born with asthma. My oldest brother born prematurely. My uncle sleeps with the CPAP machine. My auntie is currently fighting cancer, breast cancer right now, the same type of breast cancer that my grandmother died from. We know that environmental injustice is having a serious impact on the very lives and the health of the people in our communities. And these issues are interconnected. It is no coincidence that 75%, if you are Black African-American in this country, you're 75% more likely to live near a toxic, hazardous waste facility. It's no accident that in this district, in this community, we're four times likelier to have cancer in our bodies. It's no accident that in this community, there are over 17 toxic release inventory facilities surrounding us, now 18 with Elon Musk XAI plant. It is a consistent practice that is a part of the history of our country to first redline communities, force people to live in certain areas. And if you look at those same maps and where industrial facilities are being placed, they overlap. Our communities are being targeted. None of this is accidental or coincidental. We are being targeted, and our lives are continuously and consistently being hurt and harmed by the actions of corporations and by leaders like the Greater Memphis Chamber, Mayor Young, Mayor Harris, Director Taylor, who are not stepping up to the plate to say, you know what, we do need to find out more information about the environmental consequences before we green light projects like this. And if I can say this, look.
And we just have 20 seconds.
Oh, go ahead. Look, we have to fight. That is our responsibility. Fight because clean air is a human right.
That's Tennessee Democratic State Representative Justin J. Pearson holding a news conference today at 4:30 in Memphis. And I want to thank Keyshawn Pearson, Executive Director of Memphis Community Action Pollution. We will continue to follow this story. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for an individual giving manager to support our fundraising team. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., tune in to Department Uno to hear the latest and greatest from the CJSF playlist. featuring all new music from local, Canadian, and international artists. Fresh releases from the music department every week on Department Uno, only on CJSF 90.1 FM.